Hello and welcome to yet another episode of Tales from the Doghouse: Separation Anxiety Explained. I'm Ness Jones, and I'm in Australia, and I am from Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. And with me today is...
I am Stacey Bell in the US with Focused Fun.
And there's me, Sarah McLaren, from the UK with Separation Anxiety Solutions. So today's wonderful, marvellous episode is all about those behaviours that you think might mean that your dog's got separation anxiety, when actually they might not. It could be something else. So we're going to discuss all those kinds of behaviours and what to look out for and what to do with those behaviours that could be for some other reason other than separation anxiety. So girlies, what do you think, what's your top one that presents like separation anxiety but could be something else?
I think like those, the young dogs who aren't getting enough exercise and are frustrated, I think those a lot of times will present as separation anxiety. And then when you add in the enrichment and the increase in exercise, you just see like a dramatic decrease in the behavior. So I think for me, that's the number one.
Yeah, I've heard that firsthand years and years ago. I think I've told you guys, I had a 7-month-old Roddy, and I wasn't a dog trainer back then. And yeah, she was not getting enough exercise or enrichment. And she was 7 months old, so she just hit her teens. And, you know, we used to come home and she literally dug holes in the plasterboard and there was like powder, white powder everywhere. And you would say, oh, she's got separation anxiety. But at the time, I probably didn't even know that there was such a thing, to be honest. And I just said to myself, right, well, I'm obviously not giving this dog what it needs, and started doing more exercise and enrichment stuff. And voila, it was like magic. She was fine.
And then you decorated the house and put the plaster back again.
Yeah. That too. Yes, so what a difference it made.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just thinking, I mean, in a similar vein, my old girl, when she was less than a year old, she was of the same ilk. And during the teenage years, she just destroyed so many things. But that was, again, we just were not doing enough with her. But I just didn't know, you know, like you said, I just didn't know any different. But once we started doing more and started doing more classes and things, she was like, oh, okay, then this is, you know, we're okay. And actually, she was fine on her own.
When I was a child, we used to have a black Labrador. And when he was a teenager, he was left to his own devices out in the backyard, same sort of thing, not getting enough exercise, etc., certainly not getting enough enrichment. And he used to take the towels off the line and eat them.
Oh.
Yeah, he used to.
Things are right, but not eating them.
Yeah. So he definitely wasn't getting his needs met in that respect. Yeah.
That's one of those things you wish you had video of.
Yeah. He actually, funny story. So my dad was dogs don't belong in the house type of person. So that dog in the night time was locked into in a laundry. You know, the whole lock him in a laundry overnight, right from puppyhood. I'm not sure my age now, but it was kind of the 70s. And mum and dad had a purple sheepskin rug. And a bright orange sheepskin rug. And he, at different times, so I think he was given maybe the purple one first, and he ate that, and he was pooing purple. And then they gave him the orange one, and he ate that, and he was pooing orange. Oh, my God. It's terrible. I was just a kid, so don't blame me.
Oh, dear. You know, when you think about the stories from when you were a kid, I think my auntie had her dog used to redecorate the kitchen every time she went out, and he was a Labrador cross, and he liked to eat bits of lino.
Oh, dear.
Never came out the other end very well. Yes. Mm. So that's one big one, isn't it, is the kind of like general shouting and destruction just from having too much energy. and not quite having all your needs met, because although lots of people are very good at taking the puppies out for walks, and you know, because that's what we want, a dog, you know, we want to go out for walks, don't we? So we take them out and we go visiting people and things like that. But when we think of the amount of stuff that we do on a daily basis, you know, if you went out for a walk, you wouldn't just then come home and just sit on a chair all day long, would you?
Well, probably... I don't know. This, I can see merit in that.
Some days. But then, you know, but you might watch TV or listen to music or read a book.
Yeah,
or...
you're using your mind, aren't you? You're not just in a bubble, you know.
Yeah, you're not just sat there in a chair in a vacuum, like you're doing nothing.
Yeah, so staring at the wall.
No, not today anyway. So, you know, we have to remember that they do need things to do. It doesn't necessarily have to be massively physical, but they definitely do need an opportunity to use the brains as much as possible, particularly when they're younger. And problem solving is a great way to use your brain.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And fortunately, there's so much out there right now about enrichment and different ways to kind of provide enrichment at a low cost. So I think a lot of times when people think of enrichment, they think of puzzle toys and, you know, think of how their dog is really great with this puzzle toy for about 3 days, but then they get sick of it. And so when we're talking about enrichment, you know, that actually covers a whole host of different opportunities for your dog. And some of them are puzzle toys. Some of those puzzle toys you can make yourself, so they're at no cost, and that allows you to rotate them more frequently, which will keep your dog more engaged. But like for me, my favorite type of enrichment for dogs is the species specific enrichment. So what I mean by that is check out what your dog naturally loves doing, whether that's sniffing or swimming or digging or chasing or, you know, just running in general, and provide safe opportunities for your dogs to engage in those activities.
And guess what?
What?
We've got a whole episode on enrichment.
We do.
Listeners, if you want to find some good tips for your dogs, head back into the archives and, yeah, have a listen.
It'll be there. We like a bit of DIY, don't we?
Yes, we do. We definitely do. The other thing I just will say when it comes to exercise and enrichment, even if your dog, or if you suspect that your dog is actually suffering from separation anxiety, increasing exercise and enrichment and making sure all their needs are met otherwise, you know, nutrition, rest, blah, 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 vet care, all of that, is an important part of making sure that you're setting your dog up for success in their home alone training as well. So in my opinion, you know, making sure you're meeting your dog's needs is never a mistake. And I think that we would all agree to that.
Sure.
Nessa, is your dog helping you drink your coffee?
He is trying to drink my coffee, but he's not getting it.
Because he needs more energy?
No, definitely not. You're no. Like,
nope, don't do that.
Coffee is not species appropriate in this case. Not Malinois appropriate anyway.
A Malinois on caffeine. No.
No. I think they're born on caffeine. So what other behaviors do we see that perhaps might indicate separation anxiety but aren't?
Toileting.
Yes.
Soiling in the house, yeah.
Yes.
So I think that's a big one. So incomplete potty training, or could be the what's really going on, or even reverse potty training where the dog feels like they can't go in front of you because of a past history of being punished, even inadvertently, you know, maybe just you were exasperated, you know, that your dog made a mess on the floor and you're like, oh no, but you weren't really yelling at your dog, that can still have an effect on some more sensitive dogs. So that is something to be aware of for sure.
And the first question to answer, or the first question, oh gosh, let me put my teeth back in. The first question to ask would be, do they only do it when you are not there, or do they also do it when you are still in the house? That's usually a fairly good clue that it might be separation anxiety if they only soil when you're out.
Right.
But like Stacey says, you do need to make sure that it's not the reverse house training where they're only doing it when you're out, because that's the only time they feel safe to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think if the dog has separation anxiety and it's doing that, then you're also going to see other behaviors in there. Like perhaps it's covered in drool when you come home, or, you know, if you get that live camera feed up, which we highly recommend, you'll see that it's doing other things, barking, howling, whining, you know, whereas if it's a toilet training issue, it's probably just going, it's probably not doing all the other stuff that we see with separation anxiety dogs.
Right. Right.
And I thought about another reason for toileting in the house as well was certainly with the conversation we had earlier today about young female dogs coming into season for the first time. And quite often they start urinating a lot more than normal. And if you're not aware of that, there's every chance that you might go out and leave them and they might urinate when you're out because they need to go more, not because of any other reason than that. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're, you know, they're coming into season. So that's another one to ask yourself, you know, is it a female? Is it between sort of 5 months and 12 months old? And
I think the same applies to male dogs, actually. A young male dog that's, you know, perhaps isn't de-sexed and it's hormonals. Mm. His hormones are kicking in and, you know, he just wants to lift his leg on everything. And yeah, that's that could also be the same issue.
And in that same kind of area is you know, medical issues like a urinary tract infection or bladder infection, something like that could also cause more frequent urination. So I think especially with that one, if you're seeing, if it's a young dog and, or like a new rescue or a dog that's new to you, and since you've gotten the dog, they have not been completely potty trained. I do think that's one thing, but if your dog has not had a problem in the past with potty training accidents, that sort of thing, and then you're starting to see that, that is something that you should definitely talk with your vet about.
Again, for older dogs as well. Geriatrics.
And also for some especially, I don't think I've seen it in male dogs. I think it's only a female dog thing, that after they get spayed, sometimes they'll have some incontinence, which is different than having like a full potty accident. But if you're seeing dribbles or that sort of thing, then that is.
I had that Rottweiler bitch I was telling you about before. When we had her spayed, she got incontinence. And she was totally house trained. It was awful. I felt so bad for her because she got it mainly when she over exercised or when she'd been swimming for too long, or you know, like, not if she just went in and out, she was fine, but if she'd been going for like a long swim, and she'd be asleep on the lounge room floor and like totally asleep, and it would just start pouring out. It was awful. And she'd be so embarrassed and like, oh my God, you know, this is not, you know, she hated it. And, you know, it was I felt so awful for her. She couldn't help it. It was because it was something that happened when they spayed her.
And a lot of times that can be hormonal. So they have, like, if this is the case for your dog, I do know that they now have medication that they can use to help the dog through that.
It didn't work very well. And I didn't like the side effects. I said, you know, I read the list of side effects. It's like, well, for the amount of time it happened, it wasn't worth it. If it was small amounts and constantly, then because I could pinpoint when it was going to happen, I could manage it, I guess. So I decided not to opt for the medication.
That's quite good, because my, again, same thing. It's my old girl, she was the same. She got spay incontinence, and so did her sister. They both started when they were about 3 years old, but she was sort of like that constant dribbling. And it took us a while because she just kept being wet, and we were like, why is she wet? There weren't any like massive puddles or anything. She'd just be wet, and then she'd be constantly licking. And it took us a while to figure out that, you know, what was going on. But she did go on the medication and she was fine from there. That managed it for the rest of her life.
Oh, that's okay. Good.
Which was really good. But yeah, it's definitely something to watch out for, because that came along, I think she was 3 years old when she started with that. So that's
right.
You know, quite an age, isn't it, really, when the grand scheme of things, when you've had them since a puppy. So yeah, anything that's sudden onset or suddenly different, definitely you need to see your vet about, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think another one that I have seen quite a bit as well is centered around confinement. So the dog struggles, they're in a crate. Frequently in the cases that I've had, the rescue says, you know, you have to keep the dog in a crate. That's how they do well and blah, blah, blah. So the new pet parent puts them in the crate and the dog is, you know, losing it. So a lot of times just letting the dog out of the crate or confinement area can help tremendously. Sometimes it's totally down to that, you know, if they were out of the crate, they would have absolutely no problems being alone. And sometimes it just kind of exacerbates the situation. So
yeah, it's like having claustrophobia, isn't it, really, for some dogs?
Yes,
yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And I get claustrophobic, so I totally appreciate that.
Yeah.
Mm. I couldn't think of anything worse, having claustrophobia, as being locked in something and knowing I can't get out.
Yeah,
I would go into full-on panic, absolute panic. I just even thinking about it makes my breathing go funny. I'm like, oh God, I can't do it. Just the thought of it. So yeah.
Don't think about it. Think about open spaces.
I'm high up.
You're at the beach.
Winds in my hair. So I can imagine what those dogs must feel like if they suffer from containment phobia. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon, is it? I mean, I have known clients who basically, like Stacey says, as soon as the dogs have been let out of that confinement area, they've been absolutely fine. No howling, no barking, no anxiety, nothing. They go to sleep on the sofa and they're as happy as Larry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's, and the other thing as well is, the other side of that is sometimes, particularly I think rescue dogs, is they've not been crate trained. And the fact that they're in a kennel at the rescue, quite often the rescuers then transfer that in to put them in a crate when you get home. And that, if they've not been crate trained, that's definitely not going to work, as we know.
Yeah. And if they've only had negative experiences in it, then, you know, why would they want to spend time in there? So if it's important that the dog is confined in some way due to, you know, if they're a young dog and they're still chewing on inappropriate things or not completely potty trained, or if there's like another animal in the house that they need to be separated from, a cat, yes. Very goodness. We haven't made animal sounds in a while. It's, you know, sometimes just a larger confinement area can be really, you know, can be enough to relieve that.
Yeah. So like a pen as opposed to a crate. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or a broom. It's quite useful as well, aren't they?
Yes,
to cordon off areas and things, especially for cats, because cats can go through the baby gate. And for those of you listening, Nessie's holding up. I'm really not quite sure what is that you're holding up, Ness.
My dogs are. We're just coming into summer, and my dogs are starting to molt. So I've got drifts of Malinois hair all over the place.
Lovely.
You'll be able to make nests for those birdies outside.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry about that.
So going on from what Stacey just said then about keeping them confined into certain rooms and things. One of the words that she said there was chewing. That's another big one, isn't it? Is chewing.
Because chewing. It's all about context, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it teething? Are they teething?
Exactly. If you've got a fairly young dog, they go for, I mean, our teething lasts for an awful lot longer than we think. It doesn't just last for a couple of weeks. You know, there's all the teeth falling out, all the ones coming back, them bleeding. Mm-hmm.
Well, and then also many dogs just like to chew. Like Rowan is four and he just loves to chew. I mean, he chews on appropriate things, but he just loves to chew. So, you know, making sure that they have appropriate things to chew on and that you're redirecting them from inappropriate things to appropriate things when they're young.
And lots of them as well, lots of different types, different textures, different materials, not just one chew or one, you know, one Nyla bone or one Kong or something. You know, get as many as you can. If you need to, you know, think outside the box a bit, then do so. But, you know, provide as many different chew toys and as many different textures as you can possibly think of.
And I think it's also really good to kind of take cues from your dog. Like for, you know, what do they naturally gravitate towards as far as chewing goes? Do they like, you know, kind of soft spongy things or do they like things that are a bit harder? What are you guys laughing about now?
You've got the shark
is in the background. Yeah. He actually was just going through his toy box, selecting which thing he wanted to chew on. So he was like right on cue.
So listeners, we were all on Zoom. Sarah and I are watching Stacey's dog, Rowan. He's got his black tail is going behind the couch and it just looks like the shark swimming through the waves.
Rowan has always been really offended by Nyla bones because he has a sensitive mouth. And once they get bumpy, he'll go to chew on them and then he'll like cry and jump up and feel really like that the bone was attacking him. So we don't give him bones like that anymore because we want him to have positive experiences. But you know, that's like kind of another thing is you know, don't buy Nyla bones for your dogs if they end up, you know, attacking your dog.
They can get quite sharp, can't they, when they get, like you say, when
they really can. They really can.
I was just going to say, if you've got a multi-dog household, just be careful about, you know, resource guarding with chew toys.
Yes. Yeah. We got a kind of a strange silicone type thing that when Molly chews on it, her teeth basically bounce in and out of it. And she loves chewing on it. You can make like loads of holes in it, but it doesn't, she can't destroy it and it doesn't, you know, lose its integrity. It's a bizarre thing. And she really likes it. I think gives it a good. And the other thing she loves to chew is apples. I don't know what it was called. I think I can't even remember where I bought it from. But this time of year, it's apples at the minute. Apples are great. Every time she goes out for a week, she comes in with an apple.
Oh. Just watch out for those pips because they're poisonous to dogs.
She never gets that far. She just nibbles all the skin off and then just sits there with this apple. So every day, it's like, see how many apples Molly's got today.
That's cute.
So one other thing that might be look like separation anxiety, but isn't, would be a noise phobic dog. So reacting to an external noise could look very much like separation anxiety. But yeah, it's more about whatever's out there or whatever's set the dog off, triggers it. So then we have to manage that in whatever way we can. Whether that's masking the noise or, go.
No, I was just going to say that can be a really big one.
Yeah, particularly if it triggers escape type behaviors. So if there's a noise that's, you know, I don't know if your dishwasher's done something stupid or your washing machine and then your dog panics and tries to escape, that's definitely going to look like separation anxiety, isn't it?
Did we do a whole episode on that as well? I think we did. Yeah.
We're good like that. We do episodes on so many things.
I know. Can't get over us.
I think that episode was about apartment apartments in particular. So
maybe if you remember,
like, yeah, because we know that dogs in apartments struggle more, or can, you know, there seems to be a higher rate of dogs with separation related behaviors in apartments.
Yes. Okay. Another one is if your dog has undergone a big life change recently, and I know we did do a whole episode on this, but what we're talking about here is things like a move of your house, a change in your family dynamics, whether that's somebody moving in or moving out, new pets can trigger things. You know, if they were recently adopted, that can be a big life change. Your routine changing, say you were working from home and now you're going into the office, all stuff like that can be a trigger for a lot of dogs for being at least temporarily uncomfortable with being home alone. So it is, in a way, separation anxiety, but it's a bit more fleeting than what we're usually talking about when we're talking about separation anxiety. And so just helping them through in that initial phase can help them move through it a lot more quickly and make it short-lived.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely some training around that does help them get through it, don't it? Once you start doing things in a more systematic way so they understand, it helps massively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was just thinking along those lines. I think Ness said poo a bit ago for some reason. So thinking on those lines, I was just speaking to a colleague not so long ago with regards to a dog that presented with separation anxiety and also had some upset tummies along the way.
Mm.
And it turns out that this dog had, this is where we, Giardia. Whichever way you pronounce it. And as soon as the dog had been treated and everything was back to normal, there was no separation anxiety.
Mm.
So it was all down to discomfort and pain and all those things. So pain is another one, which is why as trainers, we normally ask you to see your vet before you see us to make sure that we rule out any other reason for the separation anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we did an episode on that, right, about the link between behavior and pain.
Mm. And we've got a fabulous guest in the near future when it comes to pain.
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
secret,
right.
Though. We can't tell you anymore.
Secret guest. So it's come back. What about another one, which is counter surfing and bin scavenging?
Like, honestly, I really just consider that normal dog behavior, but that might be because I've always had labs.
I've never had a dog that does that.
Well, you know, Rowan doesn't do that, but every lab that I've had prior, like, if you leave something out on the counter, it's like, it's just like.
It's funny. Mr. Big, who's here with me now, so I bred him, sold him to a couple, then they split up, couldn't keep him, gave him back to me because he was going to go to rescue, and I said no. But anyway, they were telling me once they had a he was living with them, they had a party, and they'd cooked this pot roast and left it on the bench, and they were like having a few beers in the other room, you know, they were letting it cool down or what have you, and anyway Mr. Big snuck in there, took it off the bench and ate it, but it was still really hot, and they said he had this big blister on his lips like for ages because he ate it when it was still boiling hot, and they didn't get their dinner obviously because he ate a whole pot roast.
That's happened not with Rowan but with we had two labs when I was younger. It was like my first and second dog, right? So, and it was before I didn't even know what I didn't know kind of thing. Like, it was just like, I didn't grow up with dogs. So it was just like really, really new. So But they both, one of, they were both labs, and one of them was a very big foodie. And she, we had my in-laws and my sister-in-law had come to spend the holidays with us. And it was also before I was a vegetarian. So we had a honey baked ham in the refrigerator, and we went out for a while. And when we came back, they had opened the refrigerator, the entire honey baked ham. And I had like a lasagna in there, and like they ate some dessert and like a pound of butter. They were so, so sick. But like, I was just like, wow. And of course it was my in-laws, right? So we were like newly married and everything. And I was just like, oh, I was so mortified. It was so bad. But I had to mop the floor like 117 times to get the stickiness from the coating of the ham off. Luckily they had a doggy door so they could take themselves out to the bathroom. But they were so sick. I bet they were sick, but also that they ate our dinner.
I bet the back lawn was a mess too. Once it,
there's a problem indeed. So yeah, so the other thing with the counter service and the scavengers and things is that we're back to that thing where sometimes they only do it when you're out, because again you've told them off for jumping up at counters or going in bins, so they very quickly figure out that the safest time to do it is when you're not there. So that's the ones when you get the ones who are, you know, counter surfing when you've gone out. And I don't, have you ever seen the, I think there was a video on, I don't know if it was Facebook or YouTube, of the, I think it's a beagle that moves the chair across the kitchen.
Oh yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And then get in the cupboards and eat, you know, they're incredible problem solvers and very, very, very good at putting two and two together and going, right, mum's out, here we go. In the cupboards.
Party time.
Yeah.
Stacey, did they ever get back in the fridge? So obviously they've worked out how to open up the fridge. Did they ever do it again?
We got a baby lock on the refrigerator. After that, we had to use like a special lock on the refrigerator so that the dogs could not open it.
And they don't forget. I mean, I had a vet behaviorist once who told me a similar story about when he first got married and they got their Labrador. Mm-hmm. And he would empty the cupboards and empty the fridge and everything. And then when they, you know, once he'd done it once or twice, they got all the locks to put on the fridge. And then 11 years later, they moved house. So by this time he was like, you know, nearly 12 years old. Mm-hmm. And they moved house and decided that we've moved, we've got a new, you know, all this new furniture. He's an old boy now. And they left the lock off the fridge and they went out to get whatever. And when they came back, he'd eaten the entire contents of the fridge, and he'd not done it for 11 years. And he said he didn't even have the decency to fart. He said he wasn't sick. He just ate the lot and he was absolutely fine.
Man.
They were mortified.
Wow. So he knew the lock wasn't on. That's really interesting.
He still tried all those years later. It was so reinforcing for him that he still tried it all those years later. What a fabulous memory.
All right. So what were we talking? How did we get there? Oh, the counter surfing. So that brings up another point as to, you know, what is normal for your dog? Like if your dog is one of those dogs who's very opportunistic when it comes to food and your dog is getting on the counters or getting in the bin when you're not home, then I wouldn't, you know, go right to separation anxiety for that. But as we are always saying, with any of these things, having a video on your dog is going to be the most telling thing as far as, you know, is it anxiety or something else? And sometimes it's hard to tell. And sometimes it's actually a combination, right? Like we see that with confinement a whole lot. Where, and sometimes with frustration, it can be frustration and separation anxiety, but you up the exercise and enrichment and the separation anxiety doesn't present as intensely because some of the other needs are being met, or you give them a run of the house and they can tolerate a longer time alone. But they still have separation anxiety. So some of it is a combination. And I think that's what makes it kind of hard to tease out sometimes, is that it can be both. It doesn't have to be either or.
I'm thinking of some of the more sort of like difficult ones would be things like, because we look at destruction around exit points, don't we? Generally, if we're talking about destruction, it's generally around exit points, which might lead to separation anxiety. But then if you've got nice glass patio doors with lots of scratches around, it could be because you've got that pesky pheasant sitting in your front garden.
True.
Trotting backwards and forwards past the nice glass doors.
Or in my case, bush turkey. We get bush turkeys wander up the drive every now and then.
Nice.
And the dogs go wild. They're like, what is that? Because they're quite big as well. So, yeah.
Very colourful too.
Are you on the internet again, Stacey?
Maybe. I mean, I think they're more attractive than our turkeys.
Oh, well, yeah, if you say so. They're black. I mean, they've got they're like not yellow and red bands.
Yeah, yeah. They're not, I mean, I wouldn't say they're attractive, but they're, I think, more attractive than the turkeys that we have around here.
I think you need to put a link in the show notes now to show us what a bush turkey looks like.
Okay.
So our viewers over here with very boring turkeys can have a look.
We need to be educated on these things.
Yeah.
Of course we do. It's a bit like your bin chickens, isn't it? That was a whole new word for it.
Yes, the old bin chickens.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us this week. We kind of had a run over some of the rule outs that you could use. And by that, I mean, just like there are a lot of things that can contribute or intensify separation anxiety, or that could look like separation anxiety but actually aren't. And so today we've reviewed a bunch of those, but some of them would include potty training type of things, confinement types of things, big life changes, pain or a medical issue, noise phobia. I think those were the big ones. We also do have individual episodes on a lot of those things. So if your dog is kind of struggling with those areas, make sure that you look for those episodes. I am Stacey Bell in the U.S. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook at Focused Fun Dogs, and my website is focusedfun.net.
And you've been listening to me, Sarah McLaren, from the UK, from Separation Anxiety Solutions. And just like Stacey, you can find me on Instagram and on Facebook and on my website, www.separationanxietysolutions.com.
And I'm Miss Jones. I am in Australia. G'day. you can find me on Facebook at Separation Anxiety in Dogs Decoded. You have been listening to Tales from the Doghouse, Separation Anxiety Explained. We are going to have a week off and we'll be back the following week. So we will see you then. You can find us on all good listening apps. So thanks for listening. See ya.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Thank you.